The Mike Lupica Podcast.
We are back now with the great Mike Lupica. He's one of the country's
most prominent
sports
columnists. Mike Lupica has covered just about every sport.
Candid interviews with legends he calls friends.
I was talking to Jordan about Woods after the basketball game the other night. Everybody in sports to be the next this guy, the next this guy. And Michael said, no, he's the first Tiger.
In your face questions.
How much of a dope is he?
Compelling.
A $1 billion industry, the biggest we've ever had in sports in this country, often comes down to a flip of the coin.
This is the Mike Lupica Podcast. Here's Mike Lupica.
Hello and thanks for joining us on the Mike Lupica Podcast. Today, we are thrilled to be joined by my friend of nearly 40 years, a broadcasting legend, to say the least. Last summer, he was inducted into the broadcast wing of the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown, New York. There's probably not a broadcasting Hall of Fame that he's not a member of. Nobody's ever had a career in broadcasting as varied and as prolonged as Bob Costas had. Bob will join us in a minute, but first, I want to tell you about Kronos. Kronos knows that many organizations maintaining a modern workforce of hourly, full, and part-time workers, for them, it can be a challenge. This is especially true for human resources professionals working hard to attract and retain all the best talent. That's why Kronos puts HR, payroll, talent, and timekeeping on a single cloud-based platform. It's one specially designed to give HR professionals supporting a blended workforce a whole new level of confidence. With it, they have everything they need to tackle nearly any human resources challenge and are empowered to not just find and hire the right people, but to engage, motivate, and reward them every single step of the way. Learn more about Kronos HR solutions for the modern workforce and the people who support them, because Kronos is at heart a people business, at kronos.com/HR swagger. Kronos, workforce innovation that works. Anybody in our business knows that Bob Costas and I have been friends for nearly 40 years, from the time we realized we lived across the street from each other on First Avenue in New York City. At that time, I knew his broadcasting before I really knew him, and he was the guy doing things like elevator races for Letterman, mixing in Three Stooges references in national baseball games with Tony Kubek. And by the way, kids, don't try that at home, okay? And someone who, when I did get to know him, I realized knew the words just about every Western theme song from the 1950s and 60s. Nobody's ever had a career in broadcasting like Bob Costas. Nobody's ever done as many things as he has, as well, for as long. He joins us today. Good afternoon, Mr. Costas.
Good afternoon, Mr. Lupica. Couldn't you devise a nicer introduction than that? I thought it was a tad harsh.
and rather abrupt, don't you think?
Yeah, I think so.
And so anyway, we wanted to spend as much time as we possibly could today with Bob talking about the finale of Game of Thrones. No, I'm just making that up. Costas, I don't know where you weigh in on this or your bride. I have to confess, I never watched a minute of Game of Thrones.
Nor did I. just not my thing.
No, and
anything that involves sort of like dragons and the people morphing into something else and stuff that actually cannot happen on this planet, I'm just not interested in.
Bob, I was watching a snippet of Aaron Rodgers standing in front of his, I don't know if you saw this, standing in front of his locker the other day in Green Bay, doing what sounded like a master's dissertation on how he thought the last episode could have better ended. And I'm thinking, don't you have to figure out a way to get back into the playoffs first?
Yeah. Well, it is the off season, so he can content himself with whatever it is that amuses him.
All right, let me ask you one more question, because as you know, my wife Taylor and my daughter are out of town. Should I go, after we finish today, should I go to the 3:30 showing of John Wick 3?
I would say yes.
Yeah, I got it, right? I got it.
I would say that's a good way to spend a portion of your afternoon.
And Bob, I don't know if you ever saw John Wick 2, but I said to my sons the other day, he takes out more people in that movie than were lost at Omaha Beach on D-Day in 1944.
Yeah. People have a certain need for finality, and There are a few things that provide more finality than just mowing people down.
All right, let's talk some baseball.
In fantasy, not in real life.
Yeah, I know. They're not really good. Yeah. Okay, let's talk some baseball. And okay. We're going to jump all. We haven't had a chance to talk baseball this season with you. So I'm going to jump all over the place and talk about all the things that I've been writing about and interest me and that I've heard you talk about watching you work with Smoltz. Okay, let's start with the Yankees. Bob, the only historical reference that I could come up with in terms of, you know, not only calamity, but tragedy was in 1979 when Thurman Munson died and Cliff Johnson and Goose Gossage got into the fight in the locker room and Guidry had to be the closer. But even then, and again, Thurman's a separate thing. I've never seen an injury siege like the Yankees have endured this year. And I, Bob, I don't know what you think. I think when they get healthy, they are going to run away with things in the American League East.
Could very well be true. You know, you look at the Rays, they're a remarkable story, considering their payroll and how resourceful they have had to be, and they've done it before. Remember, they got to the World Series under Joe Maddon. They won a couple of division titles a decade ago, and they've consistently found a way to be at least pretty good and often very good. Right now, in the American League, emphasize in the American League, the Rays have the best staff ERA in baseball.
I know.
And it's not even close.
Right.
It's by a very large margin over the second, which the last time I checked, talking about the rotation ERA here, the last time I checked it was the Cubs.
When you look at what the Rays have done, and Bob, was there ever a quieter 90-victory season than the Rays had last year? Because we were obviously fixed on the fact that Boston and New York were both winning 100 games or more. But what they've essentially done this year, Robert, is they picked up right where they left off after the second half of last season.
Yeah, they did. Their early season schedule, not to take anything away, their early season schedule was favorable, and they capitalized on it. But your original question is about the Yankees. The Red Sox are still a very, very good team. You look at them, and there's no way to count them out, and they're not so far back that they need to panic. That sort of thing is ridiculous. But the Red Sox may not be the juggernaut they were a year ago when they won 108. So your point about the Yankees is probably correct. You believe that when they get everybody back, they've done what they've done without many major guys available to them. You have to believe that when they get their full roster back, they're certainly not going to slow down. They may zoom from here.
We're talking to Bob Costas on the Mike Lubega podcast. I believe you told me you will be at Yankee Stadium next week when the Red Sox play the Yankees. Is that right?
Yeah, doing two of those games on the 30th and 31st of this month.
Okay, and I understand that the Red Sox have made a nice recovery after a horrific start. You know, I looked it up. No defending World Series champ ever had to play their first 11 games on the road. And then Pete Abraham of the Boston Globe was telling me, well, it was like a deal they cut around the schedule of the London trip. Okay, Bob, they could be 10 games behind the Yankees by the time they get to New York. Right now, it's 6. And where do they have to go this weekend? Oh, I know where they have to go. Minute Maid
Houston.
Park, okay?
Houston. Yeah.
And the Yankees, you know, they talk about benefiting from a pillow fight of a schedule. The Yankees have benefited, but you play who you play, and the Red Sox have to watch it, or it won't be very long before they're wondering whether they start Price or Sale in the wild card game if they make it.
Yeah, it could turn out that way, where their best realistic hope is the wild card game. And this is a team that ran away with the division a year ago. Yankees won 100, still finished 8 games behind them. Nobody wants to deal with that one-and-out wild-card game. And now think of the Astros. They are virtually assured of winning the West, and they'll be able to sit there and at least for the first round have everything in order, have Verlander and Cole in order. So if you're the Astros, you're looking at this perhaps three-way race in the American League East and saying, have at it, boys, because it has to benefit them.
We're talking to my pal, Robert Costas, who I was pleased and honored to watch and listen to him give his speech last summer in Cooperstown, New York, when he was inducted into the broadcast wing of the National Baseball Hall of Fame. And it was, if there's ever been a valediction for what is great about a sport that we all love, that our friend Bob Ryan calls the greatest game ever invented by mortal minds. I encourage you to go find Costas' speech last summer at Cooperstown. All right, let's talk about the Astros for a second, because I am fascinated by them. Bob, even though they went into the playoffs last year, having not won as many games as the Red Sox did, but we're a defending champ who won 103 games. Robert, I still believe they were in a state of shock for what happened to them across three nights at Minute Maid Park, because in their minds, Bob, as good as the Red Sox were, they had split the first two games of the American League Championship Series at Fenway Park, and they thought they were set up to go back to the World Series, and knew that if worse came to worse, they'd have Verlander going in Game 5, and then it was stunning what happened to them.
Yeah, it sure was. They have every reason to believe that over the last 3 years, they've been the best team in baseball. I don't think that's even subject to dispute. But what can happen in a handful of games, especially against a team good enough to win 108, there you have it. But this year, they're on their way to being only the sixth team in baseball history to win 100 games 3 years in a row. It hasn't happened often. The Philadelphia A's did it, late 20s, early 30s, in a 154-game schedule. Stan Musial's Cardinals did it in the 40s, again, 154-game schedule. I'm going off the top of my head here. The Yankees did it in the early aughts and didn't win a World Series, only got to the World Series once and lost it. And the Red Sox, I'm sorry, the Braves did it at the end of the 90s and, again, right, only got to the World Series once and lost it to the Yankees. And Earl Weaver's great Orioles team did it in 69, 70, and 71 and lost two of those three World Series. The point of which, beyond amusing people with this statistical oddity, the point is you can be pretty damn good and still not win the whole thing.
You know, I was talking to Joe Torre about this very subject the other day, Bob, and he was talking about the crapshoot. And I, you know, you always think it's kind of a loser's play or a loser's lament after they lose in, yeah, in October. But he said, Michael, he calls me Michael. He said, Michael.
He calls me Robert. So there
yeah,
you go.
Yeah, yeah, no, he's just one of the best people on the planet. He said, Michael, it is a crapshoot. He said, that's the reality. And he said, you know, we tricked people into thinking it wasn't a crapshoot because we showed all that early speed with the Yankees between 96 and 2000. But the Astros are a perfect, and by the way, Bob, those Orioles, the Earl Weaver that you're talking about, that's another example of the vagaries of October.
Yeah. They were clearly not just the best team in baseball during that three-year span. They're one of the greatest teams in baseball history, that Oriole team. They got tripped up by the Miracle Mets in 69. Then they beat the Orioles, rather the Reds, in 5 in 70. And then in 71, they're up 3-1 on the Pirates, and somehow that slips away. Otherwise, they would be remembered like the A's team that followed them and like the Yankee teams and others. They'd be remembered as one of the great teams in baseball history. You talked about that Yankee team. It just defies any kind of statistical probability that they would have won 12 consecutive World Series games. They were down 0-2 to the Braves in 96, right, won the last four. Then they swept the Padres in 98, and they swept the Braves a year later.
It's the only thing that's comparable in it, but it happened years apart, was the Red Sox sweeping the 2004 World Series and then coming back and sweeping the 2007 World Series. We're talking to the great Bob Costas on the Mike Lupica podcast. Did you sense that Michael Brantley would literally pull this batting order together in Houston as well as he have, especially with Altuve once again battling injuries?
No, I knew that off his performance in Cleveland, he was an under-the-radar, very, very good player. Maybe not a superstar, but very, very good player. And the kind of guy who comes in very handy in big, close games and in October games, in that he has a better than 90% career contact rate. Of all players with more than 1,000 plate appearances active in the major leagues, he has the highest contact rate of any of them. And he's not a punch-and-judy hitter. He has power. Hits for a high average. He's a decent outfielder. He can run the bases. He's a mature presence. Everybody says that other players turn toward him for advice on pitchers, advice on their own approach. So he's been a tremendous add. I don't know that he would have been as significant an add to the average team, but to a team that's already more than capable of contending. And you're just looking for that piece that has tangible and yet also intangible benefits, to slot him in as a last piece of a jigsaw for the Houston Astros makes a heck of a lot of sense.
By the way, I started to giggle for some reason because I've got the standings in front of me and I'm picking the teams that I want to talk about. But can I pull back the curtain? And the other night, Costas and Smoltzer at Fenway Park. Okay. And Bob and I had been talking the day before about what a remarkable story JD Martinez is, because, you know, they're playing the Astros 5 years ago. Martinez was DFA'd by the Astros in spring training. And it's really, Bob, it's like a Johnny Unitas story from pro football. You know, the Steelers didn't want him and the rest is history. But Bob, everything Bob and I were talking about, Bob knew. Okay. He knew about JD Martinez and he knew what a good story this was. And how many at bat, you're telling the story piecemeal across like four at bats, and I think you finally got it all in.
Yeah, well, that's modern baseball television, and I'm not complaining. I enjoy doing it so much, but you do have to navigate around some of the traffic cones created by all the right. production that's at play and all the commercial drop-ins. So there's a lot of bells and whistles, and a lot of it is interesting, and the camera work is beautiful, and the replays are essential, and the graphics are important, and they bolster people's understanding. So I'm good with all that. But if you think that you could parachute the great Vin Scully into this, and he'd be telling you a full inning story about Don Newcomb, you got to think again. So what I was trying to do with J.D. Martinez was not only to say, yeah, 5 years ago in spring training, the Astros not only released him, they didn't think there was any takers for a trade before they released him. And then that lines up with the fact that 16 years ago, David Ortiz had been released right. by the Twins, and now essentially Martinez has replaced Ortiz. And while nobody, you need to say this, will ever replace Ortiz as a folklore-type figure in Boston for a variety of reasons, a special presence, part of three world championship teams, et cetera, statistically, Martinez has picked up right where Ortiz left off. And Ortiz, in his 40s, had one of the greatest closing seasons of anybody in big league history. I think he led the American League in slugging percentage. He had 38 homers. He had more than 100 RBIs. He had more than 40 doubles. I mean, just a ridiculous closing act. And so you had to think, well, the best they can do is replace some of that. But statistically, they've replaced all of it with Martinez. And there's the bookends. Two guys who their original teams thought couldn't make it in the majors
yep.
in any sense, who became among the most dynamic lineup presences of their generation.
Yeah, I think well, I looked this up the other day for a column. I think the Twins released Ortiz so they could sign a Rule 5 draft shortstop.
And how did that work out?
Yeah, great. All right, we're talking to Bob Costas on the Mike Lubega podcast. Let's stay in the American League West for a second. Robert, I will ask you this because you are able to put things in context and proportion historically in sports. Can you remember a comparable situation where someone like Mike Trout has basically not had a moment? I know he had three games in the playoffs, mm-hmm. but this would be like LeBron James having played up until the age of whatever Trout is now, 27 or 28,
yeah.
and had one first-round series in the NBA playoffs and lost it. Bob, I can't remember a comparable to this for someone this good who never gets that stage.
Well, I didn't know you'd ask me this, and maybe some more research would be required. Let's confine it to baseball. Going off the top of my head, Ernie Banks
right,
never
right.
appeared in a World Series. Looked like he'd make it in 69, and then the Mets overtook the Cubs. A young Juan Marichal pitched for the Giants in the 1962 World Series and then never got back. And you think about him being with a West Coast team way before you had the explosion in television coverage of baseball and the internet and everything else. So a lot of those games were sort of off the radar for much of the country. There weren't multiple levels of the playoffs. Marichal was a contemporary of Koufax, Drysdale, Gibson, later Seaver, never won a Cy Young Award. But again, was he a great, great Hall of Fame pitcher? Absolutely was. Was he by acclamation the best pitcher in baseball, or the best everyday player in baseball like Trout is? There's there's the thing that separates Trout's situation. I mean, there's no dispute that he's the best all-round player in baseball. There's been no dispute of that for several years. And yet, when you think about it, here's your best example. To the average casual baseball fan, Bryce Harper is a bigger star than Mike Trout.
Yep.
And probably could be picked out of a lineup by someone who identifies themselves as a casual baseball fan more readily than Mike Trout. This is not a knock on Bryce Harper. It's a good investment by the Phillies. He's a presence in their lineup. They went from averaging 27,000 fans a game last year to almost 10,000 more than that in the first couple of months of this season. But if you just look at it objectively, if Bryce Harper were a Stratomatic card, there's about a dozen everyday players in baseball you'd rather have than him.
Yep.
You'd rather have Nolan Arenado. You'd rather have Mookie Betts. You know, obviously, you'd rather have Cody Bellinger. You'd obviously rather have Mike Trout. So if we're talking star quality, Trout is way, way behind Harper, at least in the public mind. But if you're talking about who's the better baseball player, there's no argument there.
You know, the only other, you know, it's interesting. And again, these analogies always break down at some point. You know, until Willie Mays was old, he'd only played in two World Series in his career. He played in 1954,
right.
And then he played against the Yankees in one of the most famous World Series Game 7s of all time. And until Kaline made it to the World Series, he was having that kind of career
in
Detroit.
That's a good one. And Kaline came through with a great World Series in 1968 against the Cardinals. You know, Willie Mays told me an interesting story, and maybe this marks us as old-timers, but baseball fans of any age like history, so I'm going to go with it. Game 7 in 1962. 1-0 Yankees going to the bottom of the ninth. Shows you how the game has changed. Ralph Terry is on the mound, and Ralph Houk, the Yankee manager, is going to let him complete this game. Matty Alou leads off with a drag bunt single. He's still at first base 2 outs later when Willie Mays comes to the plate. 2 outs, bottom of the ninth, 1-run game, 7th game of the World Series. Mays doubles to the opposite field, down the right field line. It had rained for several days prior to that in San Francisco, and the ground was wet, and so the ball didn't go to the fence. Roger Maris came over and cut it off along the right field line. Matty Alou was stopped at third on the double by Mays. Then up came Willie McCovey, and Houk still didn't go to his bullpen. And with first base open, but Orlando Cepeda on deck, he didn't walk him. And McCovey hit a ball, which if Bobby Richardson hadn't caught it, Bobby would have died on the infield at Candlestick Park. That's how hard that ball was hit, but right into his glove, World Series ends. All right, now here it is some 40 years later, and I'm interviewing Willie Mays. And I ask him about that inning, and he says this: I would never have looked at the coach. I would have made the Yankees make the play. I was heading home. If I was the base runner instead of the batter, I was coming to the plate, and either I score or I make them make the play to get me, but there is no way I'm stopping at third base. And he was still kind of steamed about it 40 years later.
Oh, boy, that is such a great story, because as soon as you started telling that story, all I remember is the game ending on McCovey's line drive to Richardson, okay? But as you're telling the story, I'm thinking, well, how the hell did Alou not score? And then, of course, you explained to me how Alou didn't score. And Bob, what you just said is they never get over it. I think I've told you the story. I was sitting with
Tim McCarver.
And I said to him one night, innocently, how long did it take you to get over losing the 68 World Series to the Tigers after they led 3-1 on the Tigers? The Cardinals did. And he puts his glasses down, puts his cigar down, and looked at me and said, you never get over it. And you know what I never did, Robert? I never asked him about that World Series ever again, because what Mays said to you is exactly that. And it speaks to it. It's another way of speaking to the greatness of these guys. And you know what? I never apologize for talking about Willie Mays. But baseball history is something that you're practically obligated to pass on. And I wrote a column on his birthday, Bob, and I said, Willie Mays, if you ever saw him play baseball, you're obligated to pass it on.
The greatest non-steroid player of our lifetime, in my opinion, with all due respect to the wonderful and great Hank Aaron, Willie was the greatest all-round player that I ever saw. You know, another example of what we're talking about, Mike Hargrove managed tremendous Cleveland Indian teams in the 90s.
Yeah.
The 94 strike, wiped out their postseason chances. In 95, they went 144. The season was shortened because they couldn't get it underway until they'd settled the dispute. And then they lost the World Series to the Braves. In 97, they go back to the World Series, and they lose Game 7 in extra innings to the Marlins. And there were a lot of twists and turns and things that had to go wrong, the way it so often happens in epic baseball games.
Who the heck called that game? I forget. Somebody was really good. Somebody good was on the mic that night, I remember.
I forget as well. Anyway, Hargrove said afterwards, we did a documentary on the Major League Baseball Network about those Cleveland teams, so close and yet so far. And Hargrove, who was a very good manager and a self-effacing guy, wasn't a guy trying to call attention to himself. And he said matter-of-factly, and this was 20 years later, he said matter-of-factly, someone asked me the other day, how long did it take you to get over that seventh game in 97?
Yeah.
And I said, as soon as I do, I'll let you know.
Great line. We're talking to Bob Costas, who in the same career has broadcast the World Series in baseball, the NBA Finals in basketball, hosted an iconic late-night talk show called Later that might have been the very best work of his career. And my math might be off. He hosted 47 Olympics. 47 Olympics.
That's correct. My first one involved Jesse Owens.
We are talking baseball because it is his first love and his last love, and it's his in-between love in sports. Bob, as volatile as the American League East has a chance to be, year in and year out, the National League Central is always fascinating. I mean, a couple of weeks ago, I called John Mozeliak, our friend with the Cardinals, because they were in first place. Now they're in fourth place.
Yeah.
And the Cubs were awful.
The Pirates have leapfrogged over them.
The Pirates are now 3 games over 500. The Cubs and the Cardinals remain the main event in that division because it looked like the Cubs had gone sideways. I was joking early in the season, Bob, that 2016 was starting to feel as distant as 1908. To Cubs fans, mm-hmm. And now I watched that bottom of the ninth last night, and they seem to be back.
Yeah, they have a good team. They have a good lineup, dynamic players. Chris Bryant appears to be back. Javi Baez is a joy to watch. Wilson Contreras, both behind the plate and at the plate, is a force. And their rotation, with the exception of Yu Darvish, who has had a couple of decent outings now back-to-back, you look at the way that rotation is performing with Lester and Hendricks and Quintana and Hamels, and if Darvish is even halfway decent, and once they get Morrow and Strope back at the back end of their bullpen, they're a force to be reckoned with.
Talking with the great Bob Costas on the Mike Lubega podcast. Much more of our conversation with Mr. Costas right after this from Geico. Okay, this is a 30-second commercial, and I'm going to throw a lot of numbers at you, but please stay with me, because if it doesn't confuse me, it's not going to confuse you. In just 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on car insurance. This company has been offering great rates and great service for over 75 years. And anytime you need help, you can speak to one of their trained specialists 24/7. The company, of course, is Geico. Go to geico.com today. Sorry for all the numbers. And in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Oh, damn it. I'm out of time. Oh, by the way, I forgot to ask you when we were in the American League. I'm trying to, Costas knows I'm not exactly a linear thinker, but isn't it great to have the Twins back? It's such a good story. It's such a great baseball town. And as you know, it's one of the great baseball parks in America.
Yeah, it's a beautiful ballpark. And the Twins are a tremendous story. You know, we used to just pencil it in every year, given the overall strength or non-strength of the division, that Cleveland was going to be involved in October. Maybe not so much. And then you get a flip side story. Cleveland was so close and yet so far, most notably in 16, but other seasons as well. They bring in Terry Francona. There isn't a better manager in the game, but that window may have closed. After this year, you could find the Cleveland Indians in a teardown mode.
Yeah, and you know, I'm happy for Rocco Baldelli, who everybody always liked as a player. And, you know, Buck Showalter told me during the winter, Bob, he had the Twins on his radar, and he said guys like Jonathan Scope and Nelson Cruz, who got hurt, he called me up one day, and he said the Twins are serious, and they've turned out to be a serious team.
Yep, they have.
Talking to Bob Costas on the Mike Lupica podcast, for all the stories in the sport this year, and I try to check in with him from time to time to write columns on him for MLB.com, the Dodgers, to me, are as compelling a narrative as there is in the sport. Because, Bob, if they go back to the World Series for the third year in a row, and I'm trying to remember, and I should know this, and I should have looked this up before we started. I can't remember a team that lost two in a row and then won the next one. The Dodgers, to me, are fascinating this year. And I talked to Dave during spring training, and he talked about telling his players we're going to have the blinders on, and they have started exactly as he would have hoped they would.
Yeah, with Cody Bellinger.
Oh, my God.
You know.
He had a bad year, Bob, and they have a right to wonder if he had played like this last year, if they might not have found a way against the Red Sox in the World Series.
Yeah, maybe. You know, Game 4 is really the story in the World Series last year. They had won that 18-inning marathon on the Max Muncy home run. They got back into it. They're at home. They're only down 2-1, and they're winning Game 4 4-0, and they went to Ryan Madsen out of the bullpen, and he'd been knocked around before, and up comes Mitch Moreland to pinch hit. Hits a 3-run home run that may have landed somewhere in Pacific Palisades. and now it's 4-3, and the Red Sox come back and win the game, and essentially the World Series is over at that point. So the Dodgers, you know that barring some kind of catastrophe, they're going to win the division, seventh straight year that they will have won the division, and you just wonder whether this is the time they can put it all together and navigate all the way through October.
Talking to Bob Costas on the Mike Lupica podcast. All right, back to the Central for a second. And again, I spoke to John Mozeliak not long ago when they were in first. They've had a rough a couple of weeks. Bob, you know, it's such an important baseball place, St. Louis, and the whole area, the whole part of this country that loves the St. Louis Cardinals. They're getting a little impatient.
Yeah, they are. It looked like they were going to be right there, and they may still be. It's the oldest cliche in baseball, but it's true. It's a long season. But the Cardinals have not looked good lately, and they have not made the postseason 3 years in a row. And go back a few decades, that isn't acceptable to Cardinal fans. As a group, Cardinal fans are pretty patient, pretty reasonable, pretty civil, but they're getting antsy.
Bob will be going to London to do the Yankee Red Sox.
I will not.
Oh, I thought you were.
One game is on ESPN and one game is on Fox.
Oh, I thought you were doing those games.
No.
I apologize. Have you ever? Are you going to need grief counselors that they're going to play these games? Turf.
I honestly am at the point where I enjoy whatever it is I choose to do and circumstances allow me to do, and I don't miss anything else. I've never. In the last couple of years, I said to myself, boy, I wish I was there. The Olympics in South Korea last year, I enjoyed watching the portion of it that I watched. I thought Mike Tirico did a terrific job. Not for one second did I ever have a pang that said, I wish I was there. Just for 5 minutes, I wish I was there. It just doesn't work that way. Kentucky Derby, NBC did its usual fantastic job. Tirico and company did an excellent job of handling the controversy at the end. And I never for a moment said, gee, I wish I was at Churchill Downs. I did like 17 of them. That's enough. I did a dozen Olympics, counting the one that I did in late night, and 11 in primetime. That's enough. You know, it's just kind of the way it goes.
I was thinking about you on Derby Day because I'm thinking, you know, it's raining like hell there. Okay.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, they got a pretty good race. And you're about to hand the mic to a production assistant. And somebody gets in your ear and says, not so fast, big boy. They're reviewing the tape. And you know what, Bob? I have to tell you this. We were on our way. My wife and I were on our way to a charity event in Boston. So we're watching in a bar at the old Parker House Hotel in Boston. And no sound. And as they made that turn, I turned to Taylor and I said, man, there was a lot going on in that turn, and little did I know what was going to happen in about a half an hour.
Yeah, yeah. With 20 horses in the field, I guess there was a scratch, so this year there was 19. And then you get rainy and muddy conditions. It's as unpredictable a race as you can imagine.
Yeah.
And apart from the fact that there was interference and controversy, with that large a field, they are courting disaster.
Yeah,
I'm not
you're right.
posing as an expert, but common sense and the testimony of experts, whom I respect, tells us that it's just a roll of the dice until these horses get tangled up and you've got a catastrophe of some kind, not just for the horse or horses, but possibly for the jockeys.
Yeah, I mean, as you know, my daughter rides, and so my wife and daughter look at this stuff completely differently. They don't even really like horse racing, and they said that thing was literally and figuratively an accident waiting to happen.
Yeah.
Because if one horse had gone down, four would have gone down. God knows what would have happened to the jockeys. And even, you know, it's Robert, even though sports isn't always fair, War of Will was the horse that got cut off. And so there was a bit of justice that horse came back and won the Preakness.
Yeah. True.
Talking to Bob Costas, we've been talking baseball. You know, I look at the San Diego Padres, and Bob, they would have signed up for 25-24 after their first nearly 50
sure
games.
Sure they would have.
Because when they spent all that money, you're not just buying a player like Manny Machado. You're trying to traffic in the currency of hope. And guess what? So far, it's working out for him in San Diego.
Yeah, and again, we talk about the casual baseball fan. They know Manny Machado. But to his left is Fernando Tatis Jr.
Yep.
So they've got a left side of the infield that will be the envy of baseball for the foreseeable future. The problem for them is that the division they're in, there's a big gulf between the Dodgers and everybody else. Last year, notwithstanding, when the Dodgers had to go right down to the wire to win the division, when you look at it as a practical matter this year, the Dodgers look like they're in the clear, and there's probably no wild card path coming out of the National League West. But that's just this year. You're right. The Padres and some other teams are in the business of getting to the threshold, providing some hope. And I think that they've succeeded in doing that. Now, two things. As you know, I got to go. I wish
yes.
I could stay longer.
Right.
But leaving Game of Thrones aside,
yeah, sure.
You're going to see John Wick.
I'm thinking about it. I think you kind of talked me into it.
But here's my plan for this evening.
Yeah.
Norman Lear, who lives in my building in New York, he's 96 years old. You know where I see him? In the gym. In the gym. He's got a trainer. Norman Lear, the genius creator of All in the Family and the Jeffersons and Maude and et cetera, et cetera, he has teamed up with Jimmy Kimmel.
Yeah.
And they are repurposing an old script from All in the Family with Woody Harrelson as yep. Archie Bunker and the Jeffersons with Jamie Foxx as George Jefferson and Wanda Sykes as Wheezy back to back for 90 minutes tonight on ABC, 8 o'clock Eastern Time. And then later tonight, the season finale of Brockmire. Now, that's a good evening of entertainment.
That's a good... I had Hank Azaria on this podcast last week. There's many differences between Costas and I. First of all, he's much older than I am, and I'm much taller than he is. But he's...
two months on the first and in dispute on the second.
That's just an absolute lie on the second. But you have been on Brockmire.
I have. I'm in two episodes of Brockmire.
And proud of it. Robert, thank you for, I know you're busy today. Thank you for, we could have discussed the national pastime for 2 hours. It's always fun. We'll circle back in a month or two and do it again.
All right. Thanks, Mike.
Bob Costas on the Mike Lubega podcast. Yeah, you can't tell that he likes baseball, can you? I can't tell. He masks it so well. How about the Mays story from the 62 World Series? These conversations are why we do this twice a week now. We do it on Tuesdays and we do it on Thursdays. And who knows, we may be going to more than that. So continue to download, continue to subscribe. You can find us on the Stitcher platform and Spotify. The Sports Reporters is now with Compass. We'll talk to you next week, everybody.
The Mike Lubega Podcast is produced and distributed by Compass Media Networks in conjunction with Hiltzik Creative. For iPhone users, go to the podcast app and search the Mike Lubega Podcast. Click on the Mike Lubega Podcast icon and subscribe. For non-iPhone users, you can listen on Google Play Music, TuneIn, Stitcher, or your preferred podcast platform.